Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity episode 283. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined by Neil Ronahan, who is definitely not ill.
I am totally fine, guys. I just had a sore throat all night, and my nose is a little runny right now.
Yeah, this is what Neil always sounds like.
Yeah, I swallowed a frog.
So we are going to talk today about a couple games. We're going to answer some listener mail, and then maybe cycle around to Skyward Sword. We'll see if we have time. We're going to try to keep things a little prompt today.
Yeah, I feel like for a while, it's basically every episode is going to have either Zelda or Metroid talk. I think that's just the way life is.
Probably just how it should work.
I mean, they're good games.
But Neil, let's start with you, because I feel weird starting with me when I'm hosting. That feels self-serving. You've been playing a game about balls.
Yeah.
And the dodging of them.
Yeah. Knockout City. No. Yeah. I've been playing Dodgeball Academia, which is a game that I think it was announced at E3. I want to say, maybe there was an event around E3. Maybe it was Summer Games Fest. I don't know. I had a kid then. Sure. A lot of things are a blur.
I just remember nothing happening during E3. That's why
So Dodgeball Academia, I just remember hearing that it's a narrative driven dodgeball game. For lack of a better term with this game, it's Golf Story, but it's dodgeball is how the vibe that I've gotten so far. It's split into a couple chapters, I think 8. I'm still pretty early. I can talk about chapter 1 right now. There's a review embargo for the launch day of August 5th. But before we get there, I can talk about chapter 1. You're a new kid coming to this Dodgeball Academy, hence the name of the game, Dodgeball Academia. And then you start to form your dodgeball team. And you go around, there's main quests, there's side quests, there's gear that you can upgrade, your character levels up. But the dodgeball is basically your form of combat in this. And it's a really snappy, fun dodgeball game that I don't know exactly how deep the mechanics are going to go, but it's just very easy to pick up. You know, you throw the ball. There's a couple different, like you can have a charge attack. There's special moves. You have to do the right timing to be able to catch it when someone's, throwing the ball at you. And it has a nice rhythm to it. And I also did notice that, whenever you go into, there's no random battles in this. There are story-driven ones, and you can kind of find people on the map that are just I want to fight you with dodgeball. And you're like, all right. But it's got, the music gives me a lot of Pokemon vibes. Mm-hmm. And, the little stinger that you get whenever you talk to somebody, it feels like when you talk to, a youngster in Pokemon.
Sure.
Where there's just that, shorts are cute and comfy to wear or whatever. And then it just cuts to that,
fighting words.
Yep. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to diving deeper into it. Right now, I only have two people in my team, in my party. But it looks like you get a pretty full roster as you go through the years. Well, not the years, I guess, just the life and times of this Dodgeball Academy. And it does it. It just gives me a vibe of it's Golf Story, but it's a dodgeball game.
I like the sound of that a lot. I just watched the trailer while you were talking. I don't think I'd ever seen anything about this. I like the art. All the characters are 2D, but all the environments are 3D, almost in motion, almost has kind of like a Paper Mario vibe, it looks like, when you're wandering around the overworld.
Yeah, and all the animations are really good. There's, some slight load times. Nothing too terrible. The initial load, it does this annoying thing where, you have the logos of, the developer, the publisher that's published by Humble Games, who have a pretty damn good track record on Switch at this point. And then it has that note about whenever this icon shows up, there's an autosave. Don't turn off the game. That hangs for just a couple seconds too long that yeah. Every time I boot up the game, I'm like, did it freeze? Oh, no, this just takes 10 to 15 seconds. It feels like with a lot of multi-platform games, as the Switch gets a little longer in the tooth and maybe people aren't specifically making games for the Switch, load times are probably never going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Especially like, I'm not sure if this game is also coming out on like PS5 and Series X and stuff, but like,
it does have an Xbox One and Steam release. I didn't look for PlayStation. I mostly just looked for Xbox One because I wanted to see if it was going to be on Game Pass. It doesn't look like it will be, at least for now.
Yeah. Yet.
Yet.
I'm trying to think. Well, yeah, Carto was on Game Pass, which that's a. I'll just say it here. If you have not played Carto, go play Carto. It's one of my favorite games of last year. Another Humble Games joint that I think it's probably still on Xbox Game Pass.
I think it is. Yeah,
it was at launch. So like Humble Games does have a relationship with Xbox in that regard. So maybe this game will show up there eventually. But yeah, like everything about it is very nice. And I'm enjoying it a great deal, kind of a breath of fresh air that I did not expect to be playing.
Sure.
So I'll have a full review around when I think the embargo's up, like launch day. So August 5th. And I'll be busy as well, because the Sega Genesis Picross game is finally coming out next week. My code for that has not activated yet. The game needs to go up on the eShop first. It was just announced today as we're recording. But I'll have two reviews up next week. It'll be cool. But sweet. You've been playing the hottest release from this week.
Yes.
Not the Great Ace Attorney. No. Neo, The World Ends With You. Not Samurai Warriors 5, although you did play that a little bit. You are playing the hottest Super Nintendo game on Switch.
Yeah. Noted not Earthbound game, Jelly Boy. Which there's so much questionable. Like just as soon as you bring up the cover art.
It's haunting.
Let's address the elephant in the room. If you haven't seen the cover art for this game, it is a pink guy who looks kind of gummy, with a fist for a penis, and he is thrusting it forward. And in the gameplay that we saw, like I never played this; it never came out in America before. Like now, but I was like, boy, that game sure looks like a game about punching people with penis. Your and that's totally what it's about. And it's like the most charming game about punching people with your dick I have ever played. And it's so weird. So you're this little gummy dude who can transform into other objects by picking up power-ups in the world. And those power-ups will only last for like 10 seconds or like it's different for each one, but they're like a time-limited thing. And then you go back to regular Jelly Boy. You can transform into a duck at any time by ducking. Get it? And that's how you like get under stuff, is you just turn into a duck. And while you're a duck, if you push a button, the duck quacks, which is great. It gives me kind of like Super Bonk vibes. Is that, yeah, just for that thing of like it's so immediately absurd. And then you'll like run into something and be like, oh, okay, now I'm a pogo stick. I guess I'll pogo stick for a while. And like, then, oh no, I ran into a pair of chomping teeth. Also, it feels really weird to punch chomping teeth with your fist dick. That seems dangerous. I wasn't sure if that was safe or not, but it turns out it is. So basic 2D platformer. You're going through kind of these like toy themed worlds. So you're like a tiny little dude. The things you're fighting are like toys, and you get through each level. Each level isn't very long, but it has a puzzle piece hidden somewhere in it, and you need to find the puzzle piece in each world to fight. Or you need to find all the puzzle pieces in each level in a world, so that at the end of that world, you can fight the boss and then go on to the next world, which I didn't realize until I had done all of the levels and only found one puzzle piece and then realized I needed to go back and get all of them. Because I played a fair amount of this game because it's pretty, I don't know, it's not super challenging, especially on Switch where like, hey, I fell off a cliff, I'm just going to rewind. But yeah, I think I like it. It's got this weird, like, low budget SNES charm, but like still kind of plays well and has good music. And yeah, I think I'm into it. I don't know if I'll finish it, but like I also booted up Claymates, and like that could not compare to Jelly Boy. Just it just fell flat.
People are talking about how like Claymates is legitimately pretty good.
It's fine. I mean, it's like in the pantheon of gaming history, it's certainly not Jelly Boy. Yeah. but like, it's fine.
It Claymates classic is Jelly Boy.
Claymates is bizarre. But I don't feel like Claymates feels as good to play as Jelly Boy does. It is weird because both Claymates and Claymates, you start out as like this weird, like amorphous blob. So there's like weird parallels, and the amorphous blob can also has a magic fist. So there's these weird parallels between Jelly Boy and Claymates coming out at the same time on Switch.
It's like Nintendo was looking for a theme, and then there's Bamboozle, which
I don't know if you can punch people with your amorphous self in that, but I would assume you can.
Yeah, that's the only games on Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah, that's the rules.
Once again, I feel like we're just gonna fall into this pit. I think it's cool that these games are on Nintendo Switch Online because I would never play them otherwise. Maybe they're not. Well, you couldn't.
Right. Yeah. No, this is like, I feel no guilt about having not played this before. And that's why it's the first one I booted up was, I mean, the cover is ridiculous, but also it's like, all right, well, this game, I couldn't have played before now through like normal, you know, non out of my way means. So yeah, I'm going to play Jelly Boy. And it's neat to have fun new experiences with video games I've never seen before, especially when they involve dick punches. Punches of the dick, not punching dicks, but like using a dick.
I mean,
dick
that takes
to
talent.
Punch.
Like, it does. I mean, I'm sure we've all been punched in the dick if we have those parts. But have we ever punched someone else with the dick?
Right. And there is nothing more satisfying than standing at the end of a conveyor belt as just an army of gnomes come sprinting toward you and just beating the shit out of them with your dick. It's truly an invigorating experience. The one complaint I have about Jelly Boy is that it uses the Sonic the Hedgehog style health system. So as you defeat enemies, they drop music notes and you can pick those up. And then whenever you get hit, you drop all of your music notes and you can pick them back up if you catch them as they're falling. But it's that kind of health system, which I think is bad. But that's a personal preference thing.
I think it depends on level design for that.
Yeah, it definitely, like, there were plenty of times where like I would get one musical note and then just not worry about getting any more musical notes.
Yeah, that's
because it was like
I
only need the one. Yeah, it's as long as I catch this one whenever I drop it, I don't need to gather up 99 musical notes.
I mean, maybe you get an extra life when you get 100.
No, you get extra lives by collecting strawberries. Obviously.
Sure.
This game has a lot of fruit in it.
Well, at least jelly.
You collect cherries, and like there's a counter at the top of the screen for cherries. I'm not sure what the cherries do, but there's a counter for those. And then oranges give you more time in the level. I think it's like a kiwi or something makes you invincible. And getting enough strawberries gives you extra lives.
So
I don't know what. Yeah.
Thinking about characters that often like eat fruit. I don't think this necessarily happened in the game that I'm going to ask you to compare this to. Is Jelly Boy better than Yoshi's Island?
Than Yoshi's Island?
Yes.
Yes. I say with utmost confidence and like not even room for anyone to argue with me. Now, Yoshi's Story, I will put Jelly Boy between Yoshi's Island and Yoshi's Story.
That's fair. I mean, I would assume that when Jelly Boy gets hit, I don't think there's just a baby crying.
No, that is like the one health mechanic that's somehow worse than the Sonic Ring health mechanic is screaming baby. Because a lot of ways, the screaming baby does the same thing of like, it doesn't matter how much extra health you get as long as you pick up the screaming baby. Like he's the one ring.
Yep.
So it's just it would be Sonic if the last ring you had to pick up always screamed at you until you picked it up. Yeah. So yeah, no, I put it above Yoshi's Island.
All right, I'm gonna when I update my Nintendo Switch Online rankings, which I don't know.
Did I just officially make that decision for you?
Maybe. I mean, I'm gonna play Jelly Boy before I start to slot him in. But I guess spoilers to anybody hoping that Yoshi's Island is like number one. It's not.
I
don't hate that game. It's just that it's got problems. It looks really nice.
It looks very nice.
Music's good. I like Touch of Fuzzy getting dizzy. But I just don't,
we'll go on the Yoshi's Island tangent. I don't think that the Yoshi games have ever had a really strong concept behind them. I think that some of them, like I think Yoshi's Story executes on their not very strong concept better, but I don't think any of them, I don't know if that series can be good with the concept that it has behind it of like a slow floaty platformer that's not sure hard. It's kind of like Kirby, but like it's not as easy charming as Kirby. I don't know where it fits.
So that's kind of why as time has gone on, and granted, like I haven't revisited, like, I mean, I'm never going to play Yoshi's Island DS again. I think that game is bad.
Yeah.
I will, however, defend Yoshi's Touch and Go a little bit. Not a lot. Just it was overpriced, but a fun game.
Yeah.
But like, you know, the other Yoshi's Island games, Woolly World, Crafted World, Yoshi's Story, I really find I prefer Yoshi's Story and Yoshi's Crafted World a lot more than I do all of the other ones. And I think that's a little bit is because it feels like, to your point with it being like a slow paced platformer, it feels like Story and Crafted World are both like deliberately so that, whereas the other ones are just like, we designed a regular platformer. You just move really slowly and float.
Yeah.
Whereas it feels like Crafted World and Story are more holistically like, this is the ethos of like, take your time, find secrets. Like, that's the thing that like Crafted World, I really enjoyed that game more than I expected I would. And part of that was because they did have that element where it was like, all right, you're going to go into this world and then like go find, you're going to do it backwards and find the pups, like, or go in here and you're looking for like this one specific item. That's going to be in the foreground or the background or something like that. And like that just it made replaying levels more fun than when, like, you know, some of the older Yoshi's Island games where it's like you just need to make sure you collect everything in one run. And if you don't perfect it, then you're not going to be able to see all the content of the game. And I will, I guess, conclude my Yoshi's Island, the Super Nintendo game, how I'm like that is I have a friend who when we played that game as a kid, was super adamant about like having to 100% everything in that game. So it completely broke me for a while. And that like I had, whenever I played that game, I had to 100% every level. And it's not that much fun. Especially when you get to the back half.
Yeah.
Like definitely it's more of a fun game to romp through, but it's not bad. I just don't think it's one of the best Super Nintendo games on Nintendo Switch Online. Maybe Jelly Boy is better.
I think that's fair. Jelly Boy does have, you know, that nice replay a level, find that one extra hidden collectible.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it has all the stuff that it took Yoshi until the Switch to master, Jelly Boy got on its first outing. That's the level of quality game design we're talking about here.
And apparently, according to Wikipedia, there was a Sega Genesis release that was planned but was canceled. So Jelly Boy just never had room to fly until now.
No, this is, you know, maybe
start
it's
of a new
time.
Franchise. Jelly Boy for Smash.
I will end by saying I sat down. I was like, I'm going to play 5 minutes of each of these games. And then I played the entire first world of Jelly Boy, which I think was like about 7 levels. So, yeah, and I like it. But with those games out of the way, let's go to some listener mail, because we got a couple good ones that have come in over the past couple weeks. I'm going to start with the oldest one, which is from Woody. And Woody says, with the rumored poor business practices at Activision and Ubisoft, I'm not sure that they're rumored. I think they're pretty, I guess, alleged still. I don't know.
The Cosby suite is real.
Yeah, there are pictures. With the rumored poor business practices at Activision and Ubisoft, do you think as a consumer we should be bothered? Should we stop buying their games or cancel subscriptions? Does this help anyone or change anything? What about Nintendo? Could there be similar skeletons lying around waiting to be found in the leaked information from their servers? Do you think Nintendo's Japanese business culture is above all of this? Regards, Woody.
So I want to just answer off the bat that make your own decision. If you don't want to play Activision or Ubisoft games, don't. don't give them money, don't play their games, do whatever you want. Or if you're like, you know what, still going to play Diablo, still going to play Assassin's Creed, still going to play Mario and Rabbids, like, don't, you don't need to be the arbiter of, you know, making these companies pay. Because also the reality is that, does this help anyone or change anything? Like, not really. Because, like, Activision and Ubisoft are kind of at a place where they're almost too big to fail. Like, guess what? Millions of people are going to buy Call of Duty every year. That's just, it's just what happens. Well,
and, like, the litigation is not dependent upon your purchase decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the legal proceedings are going to go forward regardless of whether you trade in your copy of Tony Hawk Pro Skater. Like, it just, it doesn't,
Yeah, like, I mean, I look at it like I was probably going to get Diablo 2 when it came out. I likely won't now. I'm not saying that it's like, oh, I'm making some stand. But like, it's just that, like, seeing that crap, I'm not going to do it. When all the Ubisoft allegations came out last year, I was in the process. I had already bought Assassin's Creed Origins and Odyssey, and I was near the end of Origins and everything came out. And I was like, maybe I just don't want to play this game anymore. Like, maybe I just want to walk away from Ubisoft games. And guess what? I'm waiting on my limited run version of Scott Pilgrim. So that lasted long, 6 months of me being like, I feel bad about this.
If you want to not buy some games or stop playing some games, that's totally fine. It's also totally fine if down the road, hopefully after these people have gotten some sort of compensation, after hopefully things have changed, ideally, it's also fine if you want to go back to those games. Like, if you know, like, especially if you already bought them.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't think you need to go out. I don't think you need to walk over to your shelf, look for the Ubisoft logo and trade all just that stuff
down. Or I mean, if you do want to free your conscience, and like, you're like, you know what, I was really looking forward to playing like Tony Hawk on Switch. Go look for a used physical copy.
Yep. Yeah.
Because they won't make any money. I mean, they won't make money.
You can support a brick and mortar business.
Yep.
Good for everybody. Yeah.
That's, I guess that's a loophole if you're really looking to not give them money. But like, it is, I don't want to be like, it's the kind of thing where I'm a practicer of like, vote with your dollar. Like, if it's a company or a person or a, you know, like director, band, whatever that I think sucks, like, I'm just not gonna buy their stuff. I'm not gonna go out of my way to read their things. But I also am totally aware that, like, just because, like, I don't know, after all the stuff that came out about Joss Whedon, I'm not gonna go out of my way to watch Firefly, which, hey, it's complicated. I still kind of like that show, but I understand Joss Whedon sucks now. But
I have long believed in separating art from artists. And that's, you know, that's another point in this sort of thing, is that these games aren't from a single artist. Like it's not like all of these Activision games were made exclusively by some dickhead. Like,
yeah,
they were made by a team of people, many of whom are probably awesome people.
A lot of the leader, I mean, like, I think some of the stuff specifically with Activision.
Well, I mean,
a lot of the Blizzard side is, it seems like there's a lot of people higher up at Blizzard for a very long time.
Yeah.
That might be deplorable individuals if allegations are accurate.
Right. But a lot of the people doing the grunt work, making the games, those people are fine and probably put a lot of creativity and artistry into that. And so if you can separate art from, I'm not saying you should feel bad if you can't, but if you can, if that is separate in your mind, like, I don't think you need to feel bad about enjoying what those people did and supporting those people for what they did. Maybe go find out who those people are and follow them on Twitter and, like, support them as people, as opposed to the giant evil company.
Yeah. I mean, like, I envy your ability to kind of do a good job of separating the art from the artist, 'cause I have a harder time with that. But my logic with a lot of it is that there's like infinite media out there. I'll just go play a different game.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of playing a Diablo 2, go look for, was it Victor Vran? I think that's supposed to be a pretty solid Diablo like game that's on the Switch.
I was gonna suggest Darksiders Genesis, but then that's only if you can separate THQ stuff from the, like, listen, no matter what you go and play, like, odds are
Joe Mad. I hope Joe Mad's not canceled. I like him. Yeah, Battle Chasers. That was a great game. And they're making a League of Legends game, aren't they? Ah, shit. Riot Games is on this list too, man.
Yeah, I will admit, a lot of my separating art from artist stuff is because I'm like, I would like to have some video games left to play. And that's something that we talked about a little bit, just, you know, among ourselves as this Activision stuff was coming out, is because, you know, we were talking about whether we as a site, should we hold off from covering them, which I, you know, for now, I believe that's kind of where we're at, is we're just, not that Activision is putting out Switch news on the daily, but
yeah, they already released like two of their three Switch releases in the year already.
Right.
We cover them both.
But like, we haven't made any more Tony Hawk content. So
yeah.
Yeah. But it's, we talked about during that. It's like, well, you know, the Activision and Blizzard and Ubisoft, those are the companies that we hear this stuff about, but, and this will kind of lead into the second half of this question, but I think you'd be fooling yourself if you thought that this wasn't happening in a lot of other places. It is very unfortunately part of the culture of this industry right now. Well, all that to say that part of my separating art from artists is just because if I didn't,
self-preservation.
I feel like I would just get depressed and never have anything left to play because I'd feel bad about playing any of it.
And some of the stuff, you know, the end of the email talks about, you know, does Nintendo have skeletons in the closet? Like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, if looking at a very ultimately kind of minor aspect of this, that does not, that pales in comparison to the harassment stuff going on. But there was that anecdote of crunch around Mario 64, where I think it was Giles Goddard who was the person who mentioned it, about how like Miyamoto would come in like late at night and be like, all right, it's Mario time, and then everybody would have to basically work through the night.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, yeah, there's there was definitely an era where crunch was just to be expected, that kind of those long working hours. That some of that is Japanese business culture, some of that is the tech industry. And you know, we don't know 100% for sure if Nintendo's improved with that, if they've gotten better. We haven't heard any horrific stories coming out of Nintendo in the past couple of years, as far as like, is the crunch very bad? Is there a lot of harassment? Like, guess what? Like, it's Nintendo of America, there are a couple stories out there that I don't like. If you want to see some stories about bad things happening across at Nintendo of America, they're out there. There's also people like that at like every corporation,
right,
in the world, in America.
And that doesn't make it okay.
All of it is bad. But, yeah. All of it is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you can go to, you know, it's not super recent, but I mean, look at Metroid Prime, like the early days of Retro Studios were,
yeah, like Spangenberg.
Yes, Spangenberg is a like, if you want, I mean, that's not even a skeleton that's in the closet, it is out for everyone to see, but like, dude was essentially,
they fired him.
He was running a porn site on the company servers.
Yeah. Yep. And for people who don't know, Jeff Spangenberg is the original founder of Retro Studios.
Yes.
I think he came from Acclaim and Iguana.
Iguana. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And then he, Nintendo, like, basically bought Retro Studios and was like, all right, guy, get out.
He lasted for a while.
Yeah. I think by the time they started making Metroid Prime, I think he was gone.
Yeah. But even then, once he was gone, like, Metroid Prime is like, had legendarily bad crunch.
Yeah.
Like, if you can find interviews with a lot of the guys that are at like Armature Studios now, talking about how like, they just don't, like, there's a kind of a sad quote from one of them saying that he can't think of any positive times regarding the Prime series because the whole development process was just terrible.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, they made three expansive games in what, 7 years?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it also just sounds like it was a dysfunctional studio in general.
Yeah.
Like they didn't have a working engine for years after that game was greenlit. We have a Know Your Developers on Retro Studios. in which I very comically say that there's no way they're making Metroid Prime 4. But a lot of that information is in there as far as like just that company sounds like a nightmare during the production of Metroid Prime. And it is amazing that the game that came out of that is functional, let alone one of the best games ever made. Because it beyond crunch, it just sounds like a horribly dysfunctional company at that time.
Yeah. And I mean, there's littered with stories for that across the entire industry. And I think it is with Nintendo. It's keep your ear out. If it's something that matters to you about making sure that like things are being, you know, I guess made as best as they can be. There's probably bad things that are happening. Like it's the reality of the world.
And a lot of the times it's stuff that you're aware of and you just kind of glanced like it, you didn't think about it critically. There was a really good Twitter thread from Aaron Sanfilippo, who both you and I know, where he talked about, because he worked at Activision.
He worked at Raven.
9 years ago.
Yeah, he was at Raven. He worked on that excellent X-Men Origins Wolverine game.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think he made the combat system or something like, oh, God, that game rules.
Yeah. But he talked about, you know, like the stuff that he is now putting into context and going, oh, no. And it's a really good thread.
Yeah. No. And I mean, I've kind of talked about it before. If I don't know if it's necessarily on the current run of the show, but like, I when I started doing stuff in the industry, I think like I started going to press events in like late 2008 and was pretty regularly doing that for a number of years. I would see a lot of the kind of like guys hitting on women and just didn't. I mean, like I was like 21 when I was doing a lot of these things, and I wasn't. It's not like I was like going out and like being like, I'm gonna go hit on people. Like I was engaged at that point.
Yeah.
But like I saw things like that and kind of just laid low and ignored it. And you know, kind of knowing what I know now, like I wish I could have actually done something about that, or if I noticed an awkward situation, maybe, you know, trying to break it up or whatever. I never saw anything direct, but it was like, it's definitely that there was a tenor of the industry that you can kind of sum up in the existence of booth babes for a long time.
Yeah. No, that stuff was just, it was just accepted. Like it's not that it was ever okay, but it didn't occur to us that like, that wasn't normal at the time.
Yeah. I think to one of my most embarrassing moments in my time in the industry was, playing Batman Arkham Origins Bloodgate. So tied into Armature Studios, I think it was at New York Comic Con. I played a demo of it and then was talking to a woman about the game. And I assumed that she was a PR rep. And she's like, oh, no, I'm like an artist who worked on the game. And like it was that, you know, that bias that I developed from seeing like, oh, it's typically the men do the stuff. And that was on me. That was a major learning experience, and I like took that to heart very quickly.
Yeah.
I hope that the woman that I did that in front of, she probably rolled it off, as it's probably not the first time, and probably not the first time it happened. And I don't, I don't think anything I said there was horrific, but it was just something like I made an assumption based off of my own idiotic biases.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in all fairness, Nintendo does have a habit of hiring models to run a lot of their demos.
Yeah, I think that was a Warner Brothers booth
of both genders, but they hire a lot of models to run that stuff.
Yeah,
that's a kind of good game, that Batman game on 3DS.
Yeah, let Armature do more games like that. That'd be fun. They had a new game come out. They on PlayStation.
They have a new game coming out or came out that's getting very good reviews. That I can't think of the name of. But everyone go play ReCore. Well, from that somewhat heavy, serious email, let's go to what can only be described as the opposite of heavy, serious content, which is Musou Games.
Celebrating Samurai Warriors 5.
Yes. So this is from Chariot Goblin. who I believe we've had a few emails from in the past. So thank you for continuing to write in. If you want to write in and hear your email read on the show and us talk about it for a while, you can do that by writing into connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com or just scream at us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. But Chariot Goblin writes, "Hey, Connectivity, since you all seem to be Star Fox fans, I'm sure you have heard of Star Fox Warriors. About 5 years ago, there was an unconfirmed report that someone at Koei Tecmo pitched a Warriors game set in the Star Fox universe. Assuming this was real, what do you think it could look like? Could it have worked? What would Star Fox music sound like in Musou Butt Rock form? Thanks, and keep up the great podcasting." Thanks, Chariot Goblin.
I think the last question, what would Star Fox music sound like in Musou Butt Rock form, is can be summed up in one word: awesome.
Yeah, I think it would work really well. Now, do you remember? I remember seeing these rumors. I don't remember if anything was ever remotely substantiated.
I think I recall that. I don't know if it was ever 100% confirmed, but what it was that, like, after Hyrule Warriors and, you know, and probably after the 3DS version and stuff too, Nintendo wanted to keep on working with that team. And they were like, well, what do you want to do? And supposedly Koei Tecmo said, like, well, we want to work with Star Fox. And I think it might have been like around when Star Fox Zero was coming out or something like that. So it was kind of relevant. I mean, if you do think about it, even with Star Fox Zero, Star Fox was always a series that Hideki Kamiya would always talk about wanting to work on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not that much of a shock that maybe there's, you know, some, on what is that, Omega Force develops the Musou games.
Yeah.
Wasn't there, did Team Ninja work on one of the Warriors games or no? Am I getting that confused with something else? Team Ninja worked on Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. That's where I'm getting.
They
worked
sure.
on another project with Nintendo. But like, maybe there's just somebody at Omega Force that was like, man, I love Star Fox, that'd be fun. And they tried to pitch it to Nintendo, and Nintendo was like, no, like, how about Fire Emblem? That's popular. And that's honestly probably made the right decision.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Well, first of all, go back through the history of Star Fox projects that never happened. It's a sad, tragic past of like things we know about that you go, oh, that would have been kind of neat, that just never happened. Like the there was going to be a stop motion TV show there for a while. With like puppets, which is delightful. But yeah, I'm trying to imagine how like Zelda makes sense. Fire Emblem makes sense because it's dudes running around beating the crap out of each other. I'm trying to imagine how a Star Fox based one would even work.
Here, let me spin some yarns. So you start off, you're on foot in Corneria. Mm-hmm. First level of the game, you know, like I'm just kind of paying. Let's Hyrule. The first level of Hyrule Warriors is very memorable to me, so I'll kind of use that as
you like, have you know, played it going, on three different systems. So
yeah,
that makes
played
sense.
It quite a bit. But is that kind of like, all right, you know, like use, you know, light attack, heavy attack, you know, some special moves and stuff like that, and you play as Fox, and maybe it's like you're going around and you're getting all four members of the Team Star Fox together, capturing bases and stuff like that. And at the end of the first level, whoever you're following, let's say it's Andrew Oikini, as sometimes it is, he takes off in a spaceship. And then the second level is a Musou game in space. I think that's what you have to do where, I mean, you couldn't do the melee combat stuff.
No.
But I'm trying to think of how that would even work. But like, I think that's what you have to do.
Would it be flat? Like... Could you go up and down? Like, how would it? I can't imagine how that would work. Maybe this is why they said, let's do Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you could make just a really fast paced space combat game, that would be awesome. But I think you would have just made Project Silphied, which everyone should buy on Xbox 360 for $4. It'd be weird. I mean, I'd be for it, and like
I think they have the character
license it out. Yeah, it has the roster for it.
Yeah,
and yeah, let's license out Star Fox to whoever wants to make a Star Fox game at this point, and just see what happens, because you never know.
Yeah,
let's wrap things up by cycling back around to Skyward Sword update.
One of my favorite game experiences of 2021, replaying Skyward Sword.
It's very good. And all is how did so you have a topic. I'm going to let you run it because I don't know how it came up.
So I don't know. I think it came out of a Discord conversation where it was it was based around the revelation of how every decade Nintendo remakes or a decade after the game, Nintendo remakes a Zelda game.
Yes, you know, Wind Waker HD.
Yeah, Wind Waker HD came out in 2003 in North America, 2002 in Japan, 2013 Wii U remade. Twilight Princess came out 2006, 2016. Granted, it was the beginning of the year. Remade. Skyward Sword 2011, 2021 remade. So with that in mind, it just seems like these remakes, these remasters, what have you. It seems like they're going to continue to be a arrow in Nintendo's quiver for the Zelda series, kind of stopgap between major releases. It is weird to think that we're halfway to a Breath of the Wild remake if this keeps up.
We're also alarmingly close to another Wind Waker remake.
Yeah.
Or a remake of the Wind Waker remake.
That's why I think when I brought this up somewhere, someone made the comment about all right, so Ocarina of Time 3D remake is coming soon.
Yeah.
But it just got me thinking about I think at this point, Nintendo's kind of, remastered, remade most of the 3D Zeldas in some, every 3D Zelda in some capacity. They could definitely do that, Minish Cap. Let's bring that back. That's a great game. Maybe they're working on that after Link's Awakening. But what would they do in the next decade with remaking 3D Zelda games or re-releasing them? And that's when kind of stumbled upon the idea of I want to see Nintendo take Ocarina of Time and just make a Final Fantasy VII remake version of Ocarina of Time. And what I mean by that is not the first part of it is just in Kokiri Forest, because that sounds like a bad time. I mean, look at that game and basically take the framework of Ocarina of Time and just do so. In my eyes, what they did with Final Fantasy VII Remake in a different way, because I think there's the whole Nomura part of Final Fantasy VII Remake where it's technically a sequel more than a remake. It's weird. It's part of their Final Fantasy VII Chronicle crap or whatever. That's not necessarily although I guess you could do it that way too. Make it some weird Zelda timeline crap where there's technically this is now a prime timeline with Ocarina of Time. I don't know. You could do something wild with that. But it's more Final Fantasy VII Remake is, if you were to make Final Fantasy VII today, what would you do? And guess what? It would be an action RPG. It wouldn't be a turn-based RPG. And that's what they did. And I think Final Fantasy VII Remake is a totally fine game, maybe even a good or a great game. And with Ocarina of Time, the very basic vision that I would have for that kind of Final Fantasy VII Remake rendition of Ocarina of Time is that it is an Ocarina of Time, like that world, that story, but it's Breath of the Wild mechanics.
Okay.
So Hyrule Field, maybe it's more expansive.
Sure.
Kokiri, there isn't the one way out of Kokiri Forest. It's all one world interconnected.
Yeah.
And then you have it where it's those kind of mechanics are applied to it. So yeah, it would be familiar in the 3D Zelda milieu, but it could be something completely different. Or it could be taking the Final Fantasy VII thing. It could just be a turn-based RPG. Why not?
I mean, I can give you several reasons.
I just think if Nintendo's going to keep revisiting these classics, do something wild with it. Because I think that with Skyward Sword, with Twilight Princess, with Wind Waker, they're relatively safe remasters.
Yes.
Granted, I mean, it's debatable to how much could be fixed in each game. And I think they made some really smart fixes in all three games. And I think they're all as they are, especially in their remastered HD form or whatever. They're all great. I think all three of them, their original releases were great. And I think their new versions are also great. But do something bolder.
I mean, outside of, Zero Mission.
And Samus Returns.
And Samus Returns, yeah, like, their approach to remaster or remakes or any of that has always been extremely, like, and some people will say lazy. I would say respectful of, like, they want to provide you the definitive experience of the original thing, not a fresh new experience. I think in contrast to something like the Spyro Reignited trilogy, which feels like a new game, even though it is the same exact game.
Yeah.
Have they shown a willingness to do that anywhere outside of Metroid? Like, are there other... Has Nintendo ever done that before?
I mean, I would say in the fact that they've kind of reinvented Zelda with Breath of the Wild, and arguably reinvented Fire Emblem with Three Houses, reinvented Mario with Odyssey.
It's not
like a whole scale taking an old game and completely remaking it, though.
Yeah, they're not. They didn't call Odyssey Super Mario 64 reimagining.
Yeah, and even when they did do something like Link Between Worlds, which was Link to the Past 2 in Japan, more or less.
Link Between Worlds is actually a fairly decent example of almost what you'd be talking about.
Yeah.
It's definitely still the same style of game, but it does a lot of that stuff of taking an existing game and then kind of remaking it, but having it be a totally different game.
Yeah, very. I mean, Link Between Worlds, whatever issues there might be with the uneven or the lack of a difficulty curve.
The difficulty steps.
It's an experiment. Like, that's what that game is.
Yeah, I guess there's, I mean, I think every Star Fox is Star Fox remake.
Yeah, yeah, they just keep on remaking Star. Yeah, I mean, I would argue Zero is another remake.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of Star Fox 64 3D.
Yeah. That could use another remake. What's Q Games doing? They busy?
I mean, they're making some games.
They are making some games.
But yeah, no, I just thought it was an interesting idea of thinking, like, okay, if Nintendo were to do a full remake of something, like, I mean, I guess, like, to you, the listener, write in. What Zelda game or any other, like, major notable Nintendo game would you want to see a Final Fantasy VII remake style rendition of?
Yeah. And how would you change it? What would be, you know, as Final Fantasy VII Remake made it an action RPG, what would you change in the game to make it different?
And bonus things, what Nomura bullshit would you put in the game as well?
Could we make the argument that Hyrule Warriors, the first one, is actually Ocarina of Time Remake?
I mean, kind of.
They all have time travel. They both have Zelda disguised as Sheik, as if we don't already know who that is.
I do, man. The Hyrule Warriors story in the first one is just silly fun.
Oh, it's so stupid.
Yeah.
And it's so... I have to imagine that when they got to Age of Calamity, they're like, okay, we can do one that's a bit more canon, but, like, you're gonna have to rein in your female characters.
Like, because, fine. Let's just make Impa 15.
Yep. Yeah, the original Hyrule Warriors is the most, like, bizarrely Koei Tecmo.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost more like Link tripped and fell, and now he's in a warrior, like a Dynasty Warriors game. Like, it doesn't... Everything that isn't directly pulled from Zelda
has no relation to Zelda
whatsoever. Yeah. Yeah.
What if Midna, but...
These are... Minor spoilers for Sky. I say minor. It's the end of the game. Spoilers for Skyward Sword. We're toward the end of the podcast. If you haven't beat Skyward Sword yet, you can leave now. if you care, I'll keep it vague. I was replaying some when I did that imprisoned video. I replayed a bunch of the boss fights from Skyward Sword, and I played the as you are going toward the bottom of the sealed grounds at the very end when Girahim has Zelda. And you're just fighting through hordes and hordes of Bokoblins.
Like, it's a cool moment.
Hundreds of them. And I had this moment as I'm playing, I'm like, oh, this is the moment when someone said, we could make a Musou game. Like, for a second, Skyward Sword just decides to be a Musou game. And it really feels like that was somewhere, something clicked. and someone went, oh, make a whole game out of this scene. It's very,
I think it's that's a good moment.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
It has been we could spend a long time talking about the Skyward Sword and how interesting it is to play that game after playing Breath of the Wild. And that's what I think, like, I've talked about this for a while, but I think I'm actually going to start my Breath of the Wild replay soon.
Yeah.
Probably still have another, I don't know, what, 1 to 3, 4 years before the second one comes out.
Well, I mean,
most optimistically, this time next year, I'll be hopefully playing Breath of the Wild too. Extremely optimistically.
Yeah.
Pessimistically, like 2024.
Yeah, whenever the next, like, not the Switch OLED, but like the Switch 2, whenever that comes out, that's probably about, this will be a cross-platform game. Here will be one more email prompt for anyone who's still listening. If you are playing through Skyward Sword, and I want to hear from people who didn't click with Skyward Sword on Wii and are playing through it now with button controls, what do you think? Do you like the game? And then have you gone back and tried motion controls again? Like, did the button controls fix the experience for you? Or is there something else there that you don't like? I want to know what your opinions are on Skyward Sword separated from the motion controls now that it can be. So write that in. connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Yeah. We're curious about your Skyward Sword opinions.
Yes.
There
are no wrong ones. Well, there are, but we won't say they're wrong on the podcast. Yep.
You'll just know.
Yeah. We'll write
it. It is back. Weird because I'm kind of surprised that, like, my view of Skyward Sword is, it's evolved in the fact that, like, I'm just 10 years older, but, like, I still like that game a whole lot. There are a lot of things that are great about it. It's just that I think some of the things, like the slow pace, is something that stood out to me more now than it did back when I reviewed it on the Wii. Damn, is that game good.
I will say, I think it does a good job of, there are some Zelda games where you get very much in a rhythm of dungeon and then the side quest in between the dungeon and then back into a dungeon. And Skyward Sword does a really good job of breaking that up into, like, segments where you'll go to an area and you just won't even do a dungeon in that area to do whatever you need to do. Like, it kind of keeps you guessing on when a dungeon is going to happen, which I didn't really notice the first time I played it.
Yep.
And then, especially in a post Breath of the Wild world, I am ever more confident with each dungeon I get through in the remaster that Skyward Sword just has the best dungeon design.
Yeah.
Like, it is, the dungeons in this game are just the best any Zelda dungeon has ever been. Each one of them is among the best Zelda dungeons of all time, and it's amazing.
I agree.
Well, with that, I think we're going to be calling this an episode. So thank you very much for listening. Neil, thank you for being here, despite the fact that you are slowly dying and succumbing to your illness. Yes. Once again, write in your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Follow us on Twitter. Yell at us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. And join the Discord. I don't know. Do things you do on the internet. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.